Page 154. B. A global march against child labour.
It all started in 1980. Some of my friends and I realized that children who are working in street restaurants, mines, factories, farm fields, and in homes are not simply child workers. They are not always there to earn money because they are poor. There is more to it, and that is slavery. Most of these children have lost their childhood, their freedom, their future, and their aspirations. They have lost everything. In a big country like India, which is the largest democracy in the world, slavery still exists in a contemporary form. Something had to be done about it. And we started physically liberating children from servitude along with their families. Sometimes entire families are lured away from their villages and held in bonded labor. They are not allowed to go back home and are confined to the workplace. They are forced to work 15 or 16 hours a day, sometimes even more, 7 days a week. They have no wages except for some rough and inadequate food. They are beaten up and, in many cases, sexually harassed. There are examples of when these children or their parents try to run away, they are killed.
A global issue.
That was the background and the reason why we formed People's Movement Against Child Slavery in 1980. It was not easy because of the silence and ignorance. It was a non-issue in India or anywhere else in the world. People thought that child slavery belonged to the past. Even in the UN system, there was a denial of what was going on. So, it was a challenging task to dig out an issue which was a non-issue, and make people realize that slavery still exists. Later on, we realized that it is not a matter of India alone. I had the chance to travel to Pakistan, Nepal, and other neighboring Southeast Asian countries, and I knew that the social context is more or less the same in these countries. India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh even share the same history. I found that the problem in Pakistan, for instance, is very serious and that we could not leave the Pakistani children behind. This prompted my friends and I to initiate a South Asian movement in the name of South Asian Coalition on Child Servitude. It was the first regional initiative ever on any issue in South Asia. It is well known that even though India and Pakistan share a common legacy, we also share a long history of bad diplomatic relations. We soon realized that the problem was global, and in 1998, we organized a march, the Global March Against Child Labor, which brought 103 countries together. We marched for 6 months. There were three marches, really, one from Asia, one from Latin America, and one from Africa. In all three marches, there were groups of former child slaves and people from all over the world joined the marches. Millions of people were mobilized. We called for the people who joined the march to put their thumb impression or their footprint on a piece of paper. We had 7.2 million of them when the march terminated. Today, Global March Against Child Labor is a global movement existing in about 140 countries.
Victory.
The first time we managed to liberate children and their families from bondage was in 1980. I had started a magazine called The Struggle Shall Continue. The whole idea of it was to emphasize the issues and problems of exploited people and show their faces and names. Every person who is exploited has a name and an identity. A rickshaw puller, for instance, has a full story behind him. And that story is not a story of one person, but goes deeper into a societal problem. What has forced hundreds and thousands of poor people to come to Delhi? They have left their families, their culture, and their identity. In this big ocean of people, they have no identity other than a rickshaw puller. A sweeper on the street, what makes her a sweeper? She is born in a community and a family which is underprivileged in the Indian community because of the caste system. In our magazine, these people could write letters, protest, and make themselves heard. One day, a father came to my office and complained that he, his wife, and some other family were lured away from their native village in Uttar Pradesh to Punjab to work in a brick kiln. They were promised a good life, but once they were there, they were confined to some small premises. There were watchmen with guns who made sure they did not run away. They had been held in slavery for 17 years. His wife had given birth to several children during this time. The eldest was a daughter, around 15 years old. One day, the girl's mother overheard that some brothel agents had come to negotiate a price for her. They wanted to buy her from the brick factory and have her work as a prostitute. Luckily, they could not agree on the price, so the bargain was postponed. But the girl's mother was terrified about what might happen to her daughter later on. When her husband heard about this, he decided to try to escape so he could save his daughter. Sometime in the middle of the night, he managed to jump onto one of the trucks that carried bricks to the market. He ended up in the capital town of Punjab, where he tried to get help, but nobody knew what they could do. He got in contact with a lawyer. Luckily, the lawyer was a subscriber to one of my magazines, and he gave the man an old copy of a magazine and said, "Look, these people can help you." The man came all the way to my office in Delhi without food or water. He was looking very sick and tired. He almost fainted. After I had offered him water and tea, he told me his story.
Freed.
It was a shocking story. Almost unbelievable. But through a friend in Punjab who investigated a bit, I realized that it was true. We realized that just printing his story would not be enough. By the time the magazine would be published, the girl could be sold. We had to act. We were all in a hurry. I tried to put myself in place of this man. If my daughter was going to be sold, what would I do? We had to liberate them. A friend of mine, who is a cameraman, and a few others, took the train to the nearest city. There we hired a lorry and went to rescue them. The man tried to warn us and make us think twice if this was the right way of doing it. After all, there were armed guards at the factory. I was a young, impatient man of 25 then, so I did not think about the possible consequences. When we arrived, we were confronted with a man with a gun. We told him that what they were doing was illegal and unconstitutional, that we were journalists from Delhi and so forth. He started arguing with us, but after a while he ran away. Everybody was happy, and in no time we got all the people into the truck. There were 27 altogether. Before we had the chance to leave, a jeep stopped, and in it were several people, including the owner of the slaves and a couple of policemen. The local police was quite corrupt, and I was later told that they came to the factory to enjoy the women and drink wine. It was like hell. They started manhandling and beating us, and they threw the camera away before they unloaded the lorry. It was a big drama for 10 to 15 minutes, and the people who thought they were going to be freed were all crying. We were forced to leave. Luckily, the cameraman had already taken many pictures and had taken out a film which was in his pocket when they took his camera. Now we had evidence that the people were there. We went back to Delhi and filed a petition in the High Court to rescue those people. The local police in Punjab was ordered to bring all the enslaved people to court. The next day, the police brought all of them here. Outside the court building, they were jumping up and down, completely amazed. Most of them had never seen a city or traffic and so many people. All they had seen for their entire lives was the factory. But now they were all free. This was the beginning of the movement.